Welcome to another episode of the RevVR podcast. I am your host, Reverend Kyle. Read any good books lately? I know I have. I read a really good book recently. Of course, I'm a little biased because I'm in the book. But I guarantee you that everybody who's listening to this podcast right now will enjoy the content of this book. And not just because I'm in it, but because there are so many other people who have voiced their comments and opinions and vision of the VR industry. The name of the book is What is Virtual Reality? Everything You Wanted to Know, featuring exclusive interviews with the leaders of the VR industry. And it is by a very, very intelligent person who I happen to have on the podcast today. His name is Yoni Binstock. Yoni, how you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Sure thing. So let's just start by telling our listeners why. What is this book and why did you write it?
Yeah, so I have been writing books for the past 2 to 3 years on a series of subjects, everything from 3D printing to the Rio 2016 Olympics. But I was really excited to dive into virtual reality because it had been a dream of mine since I was a child. I don't know about many people who listen to this podcast, but for me, the entry, the drug into VR for me was NetForce by Tom Clancy.
Oh, wow.
Did you read that?
I have. See, yes. Oh, man. Oh, you're taking me back.
Uh-huh. Yes. And so that book and the series and the movie just completely bit me in the butt. And since then, I've been dreaming about VR. And so when Oculus Rift came out and Google Cardboard came out, I knew I wanted to write a book. And so the vision behind compiling this book purely, and almost 90% of the book is written by experts and leaders of the field. I wanted to get CEOs, CTOs, designers, developers, audio engineers. I want people from the UK, from France, from Israel, from South Africa, from the West Coast, from the East Coast, from Cleveland to Florida. I wanted people from all over. And then people who were in the VR medical field or in the gaming or doing VR documentaries or building the software behind VR development. So it was a great opportunity to talk to people and to compile what everyone, or well, not everyone, but a lot of people are thinking about.
You know, it's one thing to write a book like you know, like Tom Clancy or something, you know, I'm going to write a 1,000-page novel, you know, or even a biography or even a, you know, some sort of reference materials. I mean, there are people out there who write the books that you use in college, and that's really depressing. But, well, you know, to do a book like this is almost just as much work because, you know, these aren't all your words. I mean, obviously you did do some stuff. I mean, there's a really, really good intro, you know, kind of a quick synopsis of what's going on. And then it jumps right into the interviews, but to chase all these people down and then get their opinions on things and then, proofread and edit all of this. And you know, that's a huge undertaking.
Mm. Yeah. It's quite a bit. Because I'd written books beforehand, I kind of had some idea of how long this could take, of the process of self-publishing, whatnot. But it still took about 4 to 5 months, I would say, from the idea stage that and outlining and figuring out who I wanted to the publication date. And you're right, it was a lot of work running and trying to get all these people in the book. Obviously, many of these are very, very busy people. For the past few months, there was a ton of VR conferences, and so a lot of them we're speaking and writing gigs and doing all this really, really incredible things, or building products that were just getting released. So I was really thankful that they were able to provide the time to either sit down and have a talk with me where I would record the conversation, or on their in their own convenience, they responded via email to the questions I posed.
So I know that you reached, when you reached out to me, I was, you know, more than enthusiastic about it. I thought, yeah, of course, you can't have a book about virtual reality without talking to Reverend Kyle, right? but it was kind of cool because you and I did the interview, you know, basically over the phone. You asked me questions, I answered, but then also some of your interviewees just responded via email, so it kind of gave them an opportunity to sit down and really like think about it a little bit. Would you say the majority of them were via email?
I would say almost half, half. I think some people wanted to have that time to think about it more in detail about what they were going to respond with. Others liked the flow of conversation and just wanted to, you know, see what came out of their mouths. And then with everybody who did do a video or audio recording with me, what I always did is I then sent them back the recording, the annotated version, so they can make sure that everything in there was what they wanted. They could take out something that they said and maybe didn't want to clarify some things. Feel free to do that. So I think it was about 50-50. And I just wanted to make it easy for anyone to be a part of this book.
It really was, kind of a simple thing. Obviously, I was available for just the conversation. I have to admit, the questions that you asked to kind of get the conversation rolling was, I kind of felt like if I really wanted to, I could have talked for an hour about some of this stuff, you know? This book is, well, okay, on my Kindle, it's like 2,500 pages. But obviously that's, you know, just based on whatever your screen size is or whatever. But you got a lot of content in here. Was there a challenge with having people maybe say too much?
Right. So I had tried and I had offered a limit to how many words they could say, both written or verbal. Many times people wanted to go over. I had to cut stuff out, but it was really hard to cut, you know, three quarters of what they said. It is so easy to talk about so many things because of what VR can do for our society, for our economy, for our health, for our entertainment. So it's so easy to go on tangents and to talk about the moral implications and the philosophical ideas and the history and where we're going with VR. So yes, of course, it does, you know, make sense that people would go over.
Yeah, you know, there was after reading everybody's answers to your questions, I started to see a trend happen. And I was telling somebody just about a week ago about the book, and I was telling them about how you get a good insight from, because most of these people, and I'm looking at the list here, and there's like, what, like 60, 65 people, something like that?
Yeah.
So you look at this list of people and I'm like, okay, these are folks that I've talked to them a gazillion times at expos and conventions and at meetups. Some of them are folks who have been on my podcast, people who I have done videos with, people I hang out with and party with when I get together with the VR community. And when I started to read all this stuff, and this is what I was telling a buddy of mine, it's like you really start to get a feel for all these folks who have been around from the very beginning have the same sort of reaction to these sorts of questions. Was it surprising to you to see so much parallelism between everybody's answers?
Yeah, so that was great to see similarities, but was I thought even more interesting is the differences. And I think it came from the different characters and the different family upbringing and the different locations that these people were in. So, for example, when I was interviewing people that had children, right? They were talking about the future of VR in relation to their children and what that meant. And so I just got great insight, and it's something I haven't thought about that much because I don't have children right now. But then people from, you know, other countries were talking about, you know, VR in different languages, right? Right now we think of VR as predominantly in English. Most applications are in English. And so what that means to having a more global audience. So it was really cool seeing the differences in the answers as well as the similarities.
One of the things that really struck a chord with me was the level of consistency when, because one of the questions that you asked specifically is, well, what do you tell people if they want to get into VR? And, you know, my answer is always, well, okay, well, what do you want to do in VR? Because just being in VR is very vague. Do you want to develop? Do you want to market? Do you want to do video? Do you want to do this? Do you want to do that? But it seemed like there was a consistent theme to that answer. And it was number one, go download Unreal or Unity, you know, and number two, talk to the community at large. I mean, I was really happy to see the number of people who all said the same thing. Reach out, find a meetup, find a convention or an expo, talk to the people who've been around for a while and you know, get a mentor or something like that.
Yes, exactly. You hit on the nail. The two biggest things that almost every single person recommended if you want to get into the virtual reality field is one is to download Unity or Unreal. It is a steep learning curve, and it's scary at first, but I promise I taught myself in the past several months how to do Unity, so it's definitely possible. And the other is to meet up with other virtual reality enthusiasts and experts and leaders. Go to a meetup in your city. I think that's the best way. If there isn't a meetup in your city for VR, start one. I think that's a great way to meet people. Otherwise, interact online. Find who are the top people on Twitter talking about VR, on the Reddit, both for web VR or virtual reality subreddit. There's a lot of great spaces where you can communicate and share ideas, both in the virtual world, online world, and in real life.
Right. And there are some really good online communities, you know, other than just the traditional Twitter, Reddit, Facebook, things like that. There are actual VR online communities. So you've got things like VR Chat, High Fidelity, Altspace, and these places are kicking. I mean, there are groups of people in there who, and I guarantee you walk into a room, any of these virtual rooms with whatever, you know, Lobster Man or whatever your avatar seems to be, and just go, hey, who wants to talk about VR? And you'll have an hour long conversation. I guarantee it.
Yeah.
I mean, the communities are just so wonderful. So the one thing that I did find interesting, reading a lot of this stuff is depending on what, and you kind of touched on this earlier, depending on what, you know, socioeconomic class or even what industry these people work in, there seemed to be a different focus, to their answers. So some people discussed, you know, VR as an empathy machine. Some people discussed VR as, you know, an educational tool. Some people talked about VR as, you know, a tool to be used for, you know, communications and meetings and or industrial review. Yeah, there was just a wide range of answers about what VR is being used for. What do you think? What do you think about that? Were you surprised to see such a wide range of uses?
Yeah, I was. And I tried to find the most, you know, the widest range of people, you know, what are the weirdest things that people are using VR for? And some people came from, you know, a history of like, I love VR, I want to make VR, you know, the future, while others are, I have this problem, and it just so happens that virtual reality is the best solution. Some people were, you know, not, you know, technophiles at all and didn't care much for technology, but realized that this tool, virtual reality was solving their problem, and so now they're all about VR, right? Because they're all about solving the problem, not so much the technology underlying VR headsets.
Yeah. It was pretty nice to see such a wide range of answers, and it kind of opened my eyes a bit to, you know, I found myself going, oh yeah, yeah, no, that's a smart idea, you know. So I learned things by reading this book that I just hadn't thought of before. And, you know, again, a lot of these people in the book, the people, you know, these leaders of the industry, they do say a lot of the same stuff because they've been there together through a lot of this. And so, you know, terms like, you know, the Wild West of VR and, you know, cheesy stuff like that, or, you know, it's still early days. A lot of people compared VR to, you know, the evolution. And I was actually happy to see this because I think it's really important, you know, to go from cave drawings to radio, to television, to smartphones, to, you know, the evolution of this technology, almost as if it was a sure thing that was bound to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about the positives and negatives of VR? Mm. Now, I know when you asked me that question, it's like, you know, it's easy to find positives. But let's focus a little bit on the negatives of VR. I can't believe I just said that, but I'm
cool. Yeah.
You know, you got a wide range of answers about the negatives of VR.
Yeah. I think it's important for us, everyone from developers to designers to people who just talk about VR, to push the positive, to hope for the best, but also realize the nefarious ways that VR can and will be used so that we can best prepare for it. I think that everyone from dictators to cult leaders to criminals to, you know, the mafia to police forces to, you know, fringe religions will all use VR in nefarious means. They'll use it to coerce. They will use it to find people's deepest desires and let those people do that for a great tool for propaganda, and countless others. You know, what are the moral implications of a children in VR, and what age and for how long? These are questions that I think many of us will have to deal with when we have, you know, kids growing up with virtual reality headsets. So there are a lot of moral questions and a lot of kind of bad use cases of VR that will be used. And I hope that we, as the first people, the pioneers in this field, can be best prepared for.
When I answered that question, I talked about addiction, because I think there's a strong negative connotation to just the gaming community at large, that, you know, people get sucked into gaming and then they neglect the rest of their lives. And I think it's a real problem. I mean, addiction isn't just about drugs. It's addiction can be to anything. And so, you know, I find myself wondering, is it time yet for me to start VR Anonymous, where people can come to meetings and say, hello, I'm Reverend Kyle, and I'm addicted to VR. You know, is it time for that? I don't know. But yeah, I mean, some people talked about, and you used the word nefarious. I think that's the best word ever to use. I mean, there were mentions of brainwashing and subliminal messages. And I mean, there, just that section alone from each person's answer was extremely exhilarating to read, because I'm like, oh man, what are they thinking? And, you know, some people took it to extremes and other people were a little bit more optimistic. I was like, oh wow, this is, you know, it was almost kind of a cliffhanger, because the structure of the book is basically, here's these same questions and their answers from each person. So you could, if you wanted to, flip straight to, you know, Philip Rosedale or, you know, Reverend Kyle or Taylor Freeman or Cosmo Scharf or any of these other people that, you know, you want to just know what their answers and their opinions are. But if you read it from beginning to end, you start to get a feel for, like, what's going on in these people's brains. And when you get to that part about the positive negative, you're like, oh man, okay, now I've got a taste for how this person handles VR and thinks about VR. What are they going to say about the negative? And, you know, and even further beyond that, and this is the part that I really struggled answering myself, is the predictions for VR 5 years, 10 years, 25 years. Why did you pick those specific ranges?
Yeah. I know that 25 years is nearly impossible, and every single person struggled with that so much. And I enjoyed that. I kind of liked my interviews suffer a little bit to get that answer, because especially with the pace of technology and Moore's law and where VR is right now, it's nearly. But I wanted people to dream and figure out, you know, what would be 25 years in the future. I could have said 50 or 100 years in the future. It would have been just as impossible to predict.
Absolutely.
I think 5 and 10 years, those are kind of short and medium term, where the VR industry is going to significantly change and could be a completely different thing in 5 years, and maybe 10 years, it'll be close to mass market adoption.
If you go back to 2012, you would find a very tiny VR community that is all gunned up about a Kickstarter, and there's no podcasts and there's no news, venues. There's almost nothing. And if you had said, all right, well, tell us what 5 years from now is going to look like, I wonder how many people would have predicted where we are right now.
Oh yeah. None of them.
I don't think so. I think some people would have overshot. I think some people would have undershot. But to predict exactly where we are right now, I mean, this is before we knew that Sony was in the game with the PSVR. Exactly. Valve's going to do a headset? What?
Yeah.
We didn't have any idea about that. We didn't know about any of this stuff.
Or Pokemon Go and AR. Yes.
I can't get it. I was actually kind of happy about the number of people who incorporated AR into their answers, because I didn't in I don't know, for some reason I struggle to just say VR, AR, or XR, MR,
MR.
whatever, what do you think about that? Do you see them as being kind of hand in hand or what?
There's no line, but there is a line. Obviously they're not the same thing, but obviously the technologies are somewhat reliant upon each other. Both are progressing along similar lines of adoption. So you obviously can't talk about one without the other, but definitely companies will probably be focusing on one or the other, my best guess. I think like Microsoft will see is, focusing on AR, their HoloLens. Though with Xbox, they were talking about VR support, but I don't know how strong that was or what they're doing.
Yeah, I don't think Microsoft, I don't know. I don't think, I mean, Microsoft's got this whole like mixed reality thing, but it's VR, but it's not because it's HoloLens, and it's not AR because they can't use it. I don't know. I think Microsoft has an identity crisis right now. I think they need to try to figure out what they're doing.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, the whole AR thing, I mean, ultimately, I feel like the majority of people will agree that whether it's 5 years or 10 years or 25 years from now, we'll have one headset to rule them all. And it'll just do everything for us. I've often said that. I'm like, in the morning, what I'll do in the future is I'll roll out of bed and I'll put my glasses on and I'll say, okay, tell me the news, the weather, and open Reddit and do all this stuff. And I'll wear it in the glasses, or I'll wear my glasses into the shower, Robert Scoble style. And then just everything comes in all from this headset. And then when it's time, I push a button and I'm in a VR world and I'm off doing a meeting or whatever. That's our future. I mean, and it's just kind of exciting to know that. I feel like the majority of people agreed that 5 years was going to give us a lot of stuff, but 10 is where it's at.
Yeah.
So, I mean, wow, I can't believe I'm saying this. In the year 2027, we'll just, everything will just be mainstream.
Yes.
I mean, is that what you're thinking?
I think most people were predicting, obviously, how well, most people were predicting that it would be as similar as smartphones adoption, and that penetration rate that a vast majority of people in the developed world will have one, and a growing number of people in the developing world will have one as well.
I wonder if this will create some form of schism in the community. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Surrogates. with Bruce Willis. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder if this technology, as it gets, and I'm kind of getting a little esoteric here, but you know, I wonder if this technology will eventually create this level of the haves and the have nots of, you know, the immersive technology, and the people that are in it are, you know, and then there's those like Luddite, like, I don't want to be involved in this kind of nonsense because it's destroying humanity. What do you think about that?
I think there is going to be that reaction, without a doubt, especially from an older generation, maybe from the right wing. Who knows? But I think in terms of have or have not, it'll be interesting because it'll be subjective. So let's say I was talking about this to another friend. Let's say the government of India, in order to save money, they offered to 500 million people, their citizens, if they wanted to hook up to VR for the next 10 years, right? They couldn't get out. But they would be living the most amazing life of luxury, of health, of happiness, of epic adventures, whatnot. And the government would keep them fed through tubes. They keep them healthy. And after 10 years, they'd be able to go on their way. And so subjectively, all these people would be having the epic time of their life and in all these great adventures and living a life of luxury and happiness. And especially compared to what they might be living through of abject poverty. Who are we to say? We obviously think about addicts, you know, Western gamers in the basement. And yeah, like their life, you know, what do you do with your life? It's so great, so many opportunities, and you're just wasting it. But what about people who could have a subjective better life in VR? So that's something I think about sometimes.
I'll tell you what, I personally would not take that offer currently. I would wait until the technology got a little bit better.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree.
But I think you're onto something there, because I feel like there'd be people who would actually even take that offer right now. There are some folks who are just so I don't want to use the word obsessed, passionate about this technology that they are willing to do something like that. I mean, there's, you know, everybody's good friend Palmer Luckey just recently tweeted, "Wow, it's really hard to find a doctor to put technology into your body." And I'm like, what is he implanting in himself? I wonder, you know, but I mean, the whole idea of that wetware connectivity is a thing that will happen in the future. And, you know, that's, I don't know. It takes a little too far sometimes. I mean, would you allow somebody to like stick a comb of sensors into your brain just to give you the ultimate VR experience?
I think I would.
Oh, would you? That's cool.
I think I would. Cause we're going to have to trick the brain, really. I think we're going to have to eventually bypass, you know, the eyes, the nose, you know, touch, and go directly to input the brain to get to perfectly mimic a reality in order to have fully immersive experience, to have it, you know, not be non-distinguishable from reality. So, yeah, I think eventually that's where it has to be. So I guess I'm going to be okay with it.
Brought to you by Facebook. Please stand by while we give you a 15-second ad before your reality continues.
Yeah. Yes. That's very true.
That's where it's going to go. This book feels to me like it's got a life of its own. When you have interviews with leaders of the industry, the leaders, like all regimes, different leaders come and go. And, you know, how do you tackle it when you've got, you know, maybe 15 or 20 new, really exciting voices out there that aren't part of this book yet? How do you tackle that?
I think I tried the best I could to get, I'd say, old timers, you know, people who created Second Life, right? Who've been doing PhDs and dissertations on VR for the past 3 decades. And I hope to include, you know, as many of those guys who's been thinking about VR, you know, for longer than I've been touching a computer. But I also wanted to get people who've been in VR for, let's say, the past 6 months or past year and just dove headfirst in it. They're the leader of their community in it. And they also have insight, and they also do have an opinion to share.
And I guess you had mentioned that you're going to maybe do additional editions.
Yep.
So how does that work?
So one thing I love about self-publishing and publishing via Kindle, it connects to the developer, the programmer in me, is the version control. So that first, I can make any corrections. Let's say there's a typo. There are none, I hope, but let's say there is. And I can make that typo, submit it or push it to the Amazon store, and then everyone who has Kindle will automatically have the most up-to-date version with that correction, as long as they're connected to the Wi-Fi. And then so I want to include not only any corrections there may be and always keep it up-to-date, but also include even more interviews. Potentially, I had this goal maybe in several years to get to 100 people. I think that'd be a good conclusion. But for now, I'm looking for a new cohort to get maybe to 60, 80 people to add their value and their insight into the book.
Wow. So you use the Amazon store as your own personal literary GitHub.
Exactly. That's a awesome. Great way to put it. Yes.
Wow. The decision to self-publish, let's talk about that for a moment. Some of my regular listeners know, and some of my good VR buddies know, that I have been in the process of writing a sort of biographical book over the course of the last year or so, and I'm hoping to finish it up sometime at the end of this year. Self-publishing, how does that work? Is that a good way to go?
I think so. I'll be frank with everyone. It is... I would not quit your job and decide you're going to live off of your earnings from your books. Because the price point is so low for most books, let's say $2.99, maybe $4.99, rarely above that, it's not going to bring in the bacon. But what it does do, and why I love to do it, and why I will continue to do it, is that it allows me, as someone who's interested in VR, to put my thoughts together, to focus my energies in certain, areas. It allows me the opportunity to connect with people I would not have the opportunity to connect with. It allows me to, establish myself as a leader in the field. So as I continue to grow my own VR development studio, I can use this book as marketing collateral. And I think the barriers are gone. The editors, you can hire an editor for quite cheap, either from Canada, from America, from Australia, and you don't need a publisher to really publish your own book.
If you get an editor from Canada, do they handle the A's different?
Yeah,
no, I'm just kidding. Okay. They're super
polite. They don't do any red markings. It's all like in gray and like silver. Like, sorry, but you have this little mistake.
So sorry. Canada, I love you, Canada. If I wanted a hardback copy of this book, can I get one?
Not yet, no. Because I wouldn't be able to update it, right? I want the ability to, as I said, to maybe get to 100 people before I feel that it's complete. And I think once it's 100 people, then maybe I will do a paper version. But for now, just because the VR industry changes so much and it's changed so much in the past year, and I'm sure it'll change so much in the coming years, I just want the ability to keep it up to date, to keep it fresh. And maybe when there's some more stability, then I can print it on paper.
Sounds smart. It's good thinking. Good thinking. So let's give you a little street cred. You are a developer.
Yes.
So what are you working on in the VR world?
Yeah, so for the majority of my development career, I've been a front-end and mobile app developer. And in the past year, I started getting into web VR. I'm sure you and many of your readers and listeners know about web VR. But for those who don't, it is virtual reality for the web. Compared to games and experiences built by Unity or Unreal, meant for the Oculus Rift or the HTC Vive. Web VR, probably mostly made with A-Frame, which is built by Mozilla, is pretty much in your markup, is in HTML. It is so easy, and it just runs in the browser. And so it runs on your desktop, on your mobile phone, even on the Oculus Rift and the HTC through their own browsers. So it is a platform for VR development and distribution that's much cheaper and easier, and a little bit more open source. And so that's what I've been working on, building projects just on the spare time. And what's great, I think it's really picked up in agencies and companies are starting to get interested in it. And so they're starting to hire developers like myself and hire agencies like mine to create demos or to create experiences in virtual reality, but through the browser. And that's what I do.
Yeah, you know, web VR is hot buzzword right now.
Yes.
And I know even the company I work for, we've been doing some web VR stuff. I won't go into it in great detail, but yeah, it's VR content delivered over the web. Do you find web VR to be kind of still in its infantile stage, a little limiting in the terms of content and how robust it can be?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's what's so exciting about it. A-Frame, I mean, is just about a year old. And I think it's in 0.5 version, maybe 0.6 version right now. So everyone, I think, in the community knows that, you know, we're all figuring it out, how to do locomotion, you know, with a mobile VR experience without tracking, how to have a similar experience in VR on your desktop and on your phone and with the dedicated headset. How to make sure that the browsers, both in different browsers, let's say Chrome and Firefox and Safari, are going to work, and how your programs are going to interface with those browsers and those browsers on mobile phones. So there's a lot of questions and standards that still need to be built, but it's a really exciting time, and I really like it here.
Yeah, I find myself getting the most frustrated with web VR dealing with all the different mobile browsers. That is the biggest challenge right now. I mean, something on mobile Safari works differently than on mobile Firefox, than on mobile Chrome. You know, it's all over the place. I mean, really, there needs to be some level of consistency there. And those kind of standards take time. And, you know, it's just a matter of time.
It's just a matter of time. And all the browsers and all the parent companies behind those browsers, they all know it. And they're working towards it. And there's all these conferences around standards. And I think we're gonna see that. And I think we'll see what's gonna be probably more exciting is I think we'll have better graphics. I think there'll be more 3D models people can use, and I think we'll have it's possible now, but it'll be easier to have kind of multi-user experiences, and so that people can come to a website together and see each other in web VR, no matter if you're on a desktop, a mobile, or a dedicated VR headset. I think that's going to be really exciting, and I think that'll push web VR forward.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, obviously when people look at VR, AR, XR, MR, whatever, and then there's web VR, and I feel like web VR is kind of like the tail of the dog. It's there, it's attached, it's wagging, it's happy, it's excited, but it's just always going to be a step behind the rest of the dog. And you know, hopefully someday there can be some parity and everything will become, you know, easy and kind of consistent in its in interpretation of web VR, and we'll have standards, and you know, because as bandwidth gets bigger, you know, the internet tubes get wider, data can get to you faster. I mean, who knows? There's a possibility that somewhere out there, someday, off in the future, latency can be so low that, you know, IMUs can talk to a server thousands of miles away and send back the right frame at who knows how many frames per second. It's possible. It's very possible. Yeah. So I'm just curious, Yoni, what excites you about, because, you know, one thing I noticed is that you didn't answer any of your questions in your book. Did you consider putting yourself in?
I did not. No, actually not at all. Really? I felt that I wrote the introduction and conclusion. And I think that's what people just want to read from me. Like, just get to the experts. I don't want to read your stuff. Maybe later. You know, I'm still new to this industry, right? I've only been, you know, doing development for the past year and a half. Only started this book, you know, 4, maybe 6 months ago. So I would never consider myself an expert in the field, at least not yet.
Well, luckily, one of your questions doesn't require you to be an expert. Because, okay. As a matter of fact, you could ask this question of a million people, and they don't have to be experts. They don't even have to be very knowledgeable. All they have to do is know that VR is a thing, and it's coming down the road, you know, full force. I want to know, Yoni, what excites you the most about virtual reality?
I'm going to cheat here and say two things. I think in terms of me as Yoni, I love video games, so VR gaming is just so much fun. It's so enjoyable, and I cannot wait to where it goes. And kind of living the games that I played as a child, or living experiencing in VR, the books I read as a child, and full immersive VR, I cannot wait. But in terms of societal impact and where I see VR making the biggest difference is probably in education. Google has done a great job so far, and many other companies, in figuring out and bringing VR to the classroom. And just where with a cardboard, it's amazing to see how kids react to VR, and what the current demos and the current companies building education curriculum with virtual reality. It's amazing diving into the molecule and figuring out how protons and neutrons and electrons work. Go walk among the dinosaurs, or during the time of the Romans, and that excites me so much to completely revamp how we teach children and the next generation. Instead of a teacher, a classroom, and a board and books, students will be able to live through every and experience every classroom exercise.
It'd be a beautiful thing. I love that. That's a great answer. And the education stuff, I know that there's a lot of push for that. I'm really excited to see the future that is. Well, I'll tell you what, Yoni, if this conversation hasn't convinced everybody and their brother and sister to go out and buy this book, I don't know what will. Okay. I mean, this has been a fantastic conversation for all of you out there in listener land. The name of the book is called What is Virtual Reality? Everything You Wanted to Know, featuring exclusive interviews with the leaders of the VR industry. If you go to Amazon.com right now, so whatever you're doing, if you're on the train or the bus or you're in your car, pull over, just stop your car right in the middle of traffic. That's fine. And get out your phone and go to Amazon.com, type in What is Virtual Reality, hit search, and then read now. It'll download to your Kindle. You can read it. If you're a Prime member, lucky you. The Kindle price is $4.99 for everybody else, but doesn't everybody have Prime nowadays?
Isn't that I don't know. Man, I know I don't.
You don't? Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, maybe I'm just lucky then. But anyway, go out there, get that, get the book, download it, and let us know and let the world know what you think. So throw some reviews out there. It's already got like a gazillion stars, lots of good reviews. Check it out. It says print length, 203 pages. Okay. Wow. My type must be really big on my Kindle app. I'm blind. hey, and it has text to speech apparently. You know, it'd be interesting to have everybody go back and
do the audio.
Audio version. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that might be asking people too much though. Yeah. I would gladly do that for you.
Right. I think you'd enjoy to do it.
Yeah, I would. I have a blast. I'll read other people's stuff. I'll try to do voices, you know. I don't know if I could do everybody's voice, but I can try. all right, Yoni, where are you out in the metaverse? Where do we find you, and what is your contact information and all that good stuff?
Yeah, so you can find me on Twitter. My handle is at Yoni, Y-O-N-I, Binstock, B-I-N-S-T-O-C-K. You can find more about the book either on Amazon or by typing in whatisvrbook.com. And if you're looking for anything with web VR, check out infinityvrstudios.com. And that's some of my work with web VR. Thanks so much.
Yeah, and it's very good stuff too, by the way. If you want to go check out his web VR stuff, it's you're pushing the limits, and that's pretty cool. One last question, because I forgot to ask you. If you could get anybody, if there was one name, one person who you didn't get for this book, because I'm going to try to help you out here. Who do you need? Who's your big fish?
That is a good question. I would like Tony Parisi.
Tony, okay.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Yes. What about Palmer?
Ooh. I even put him on my list. I thought that was going to be impossible.
Oh, totally impossible? All right. Well, we'll see. We'll see what we can do.
If I could get him, I mean, fantastic.
Yeah. Did you reach out to Tony?
Yes, and I think he did respond. He just said he was busy with the speaking arrangements for the past few months.
Hmm.
But maybe he'll be in the second version. I hope so.
I'll reach out to him, see what kind of leverage I can pull for it.
Much obliged.
All right. So, okay. Well, everybody go out and get that book. I'm really curious to hear feedback on that. And Yoni, you know, keep doing what you're doing. I look forward to version two of the book. And, you know, good luck with all of your future ventures, sir.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right. Thank you for being on. And thank you all very much for listening. This podcast is a production of RevVR Studios. Music provided by Jesse Spillane. Comments and views expressed on the RevVR podcast are the sole opinions of Reverend Kyle or his guests. For more information, visit RevVRStudios.com.